And welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer, where we equip churches to move from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Revitalize and Replant is brought to you by the North American Mission Board.
Welcome to episode 56 of Revitalize and Replant. We're going to answer a question that in essence comes across like this. Is serving in a revitalization a unique calling? We were discussing this off the air just a few minutes ago, that there are some people who would say, just call yourself a pastor. Don't call yourself a revitalization pastor. There were some who would say, yeah, it might be a unique calling. There's some who will say it might be a just more of a calling to vocational ministry. We're not going to give a hard and fast answer to that because I don't think there is a hard and fast answer.
Because our answer is always,
it depends.
It depends.
It depends. And you know, the older I get, the more the word depends means.
Yeah, all right.
There we go.
So, all right. Next. It didn't take long, did it, for that?
So we're going to answer a question from Joseph. And I know that we'll remember our sponsor at the end, but thank you, North American Mission Board, for allowing people like Joseph to articulate questions that we can then answer with Mark Clifton here.
Yes.
And Jonathan the Voice Howe.
Yes.
And Amy the J and Amy the T. And I was talking to my neighbor today,
Amy.
Uh-huh. And then as I was getting ready, I was listening to a podcast by Amy P. Porterfield.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm going to go
heard
see
from
Amy W.
Amy W.
Yeah, I've been texting.
Yeah, that's good.
And then you listen to Amy Grant on the way in.
El Shaddai.
There you go. My father's eyes.
Okay. All right. Joseph, thanks for your question. Joseph is going to get a book. He's going to get Reclaiming Glory from Mark Clifton, and he's going to get Autopsy of a Deceased Church from Dr. Tom Rainer for this question. Is serving in a revitalization a separate calling than the initial calling to pastoral ministry? If so, how?
So, Mark, here's what we'll do.
Yeah.
We will say it depends, and there's differences of opinion on what that type of call is. There's differences of opinion on a local church call. You know, is the call to vocational ministry unique? Is the call to a specific church unique? And this one, is the call to revitalization a unique call? So what we will do is we'll say, this is what it is, rather than give a answer specificity to the question.
With that said,
yes,
let me push back on disagree just a tad. No, I won't disagree. But I hear this all the time. I get calls from guys all the time say, hey, I'm called to be a revitalizing pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And my antenna always go up because I want to know, what does that mean? And sometimes it means, and I'm going to be very careful and don't turn off the podcast here, but sometimes it means I don't fit in anywhere else. And I can't really find a church, and maybe there's a church sick enough that I could go there. You think I'm kidding, right?
No, Mark.
His first pastorate.
Well, not only that, my first, second, third pastorate. When I was graduating from seminary and I was about to leave my second pastorate, I had two seminary pastorates, and I was about to leave my second pastorate, and I put out the physical resumes. You remember those days?
I do.
Putting out the physical resumes. Nobody wanted me. Nobody.
Little did they know.
And then finally, the Azalea Baptist Church in St. Petersburg, Florida, in need of great revitalization, call me because they couldn't find anybody else that they thought would potentially do the job. So that's exactly true. I felt called to revitalization because they're the only church that wanted me to come.
I got you. And there are some guys who feel like, man, God, give me a burden and a heart. When they say I've got a heart and a compassion for a struggling, dying congregation, that resonates with me a little bit more than I'm called to be a revitalization pastor.
I get that. That makes
sense.
Because,
you know, the revitalization is God's work, and you're not going to make it happen just because you show up there. So
yeah.
That's my caveat. I just want to put that out there, then we'll head in.
I don't disagree with
you. No. And I think there is a thing there where you got to think that, like you said, the revitalization is God's work.
Yep.
And it's not just, oh, well, we're going to hire a revitalization.
Yeah.
And churches need to think about this, too.
Yeah.
Because churches don't need to go out, we need a revitalization pastor.
Mm-mm.
What is that?
Right, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
But I have a caveat to your caveat.
Okay, I'm ready.
you and I are talking about in the very near future developing a certification process.
Yes.
So some people may say, I'm not only called, I'm certified.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's more of a training.
Yes.
It's preparation.
Right.
So we're not necessarily putting the stamp on any one position or other. We're just saying, here's some certification that will take
exactly.
place.
Some equipping to do this, because it is very challenging and very difficult. And I would say, without any doubt at all, you've got to be called to this very challenging and difficult thing of going to a dying church. I guess if guys are going to talk to me, I'm much more comfortable talking to guys who call me and say, hey, I really feel compassion to go to a broken and dysfunctional church and serve them and love them and care for them, than guys who say, you know, my ministry is to turn churches around and revitalize them. And I hear that sometimes.
Sure you do.
And most of the time, they haven't ever done it. But
yep.
That's neither here nor there.
Yep.
All right. So the six things that it is to be a revitalization pastor, it is a local congregational calling.
Yeah, that's what I said to begin with. It's a calling to a local congregation and all of its dysfunction and all of its challenges. And as we say, almost every podcast, loving the church you're called to, not the church you wish you had. And those initial members, when you get there, are not an obstacle to your ministry. They are your ministry. And to just love them and care for them and take all the time you need. You know, when I went to Warnell as a director of missions, and it was a church that was about to close its doors. And I went really just to keep them from closing their doors and thinking, you know, I would stay for a few months or a year and then help them call a pastor. I got two distinct calls in my life related to Warnell, Dr. Rainer. First was to go there to help them to keep from closing. But there was a very distinct call in my life and with my wife as well when God called us to stay there.
Hmm.
And to stay and become the pastor and resign as director of missions and become bivocational and just pour my life into that, at that time, very dysfunctional church.
Hmm.
And I didn't see myself as a revitalizing pastor. I saw myself as a pastor for this local church that was deeply troubled and had many, many layers of conflict and problems.
And remind me, Mark, you probably have said it in the past, you resigned your director of missions, and what was your other vocation?
I became the executive director of what was called the Lighthouse, still is, and is one of the largest maternity homes in Kansas City. As a
residential. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know nothing about birthing no babies, but I was the executive director. I think we had 13 employees, and we had a residential home where we could have up to 10 young girls and two babies at one time. We were a state licensed adoption agency.
Did you know that,
no.
Jonathan?
So I did that. And basically, my job was to raise money as the executive director.
Yeah.
That was my job, to make payroll, but to communicate the message of life across Kansas City. I enjoyed doing that. So that was my second job.
Amy J. Hill's executive director of a nonprofit. Did you know that?
I was.
Amy J. did. Amy T. Did you know that? Amy T. didn't know that. Amy T.'s in the zone.
Yeah,
over there.
She's working.
She's working.
All right. So.
All right. Well, you kind of touched on this, though. It's a family calling. You mentioned that, you know, Jill was in there with you.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the first thing. I mean, I knew that if the Lord was going to call me to stay there and to revitalize and to work at this church for as long as it was going to take, he was going to call her. And
is she here?
She was here yesterday.
I never met her
in the building.
Are you ashamed to show her to me?
No.
Are you ashamed to show me to her?
Well,
yeah.
No. She was here all day yesterday in the building and at the bookstore. And
did she play skee ball?
She played skee ball. She won, so she got all the tickets. And as she left, she was able to get a little stuffed animal at the thing as you leave.
Oh, but, good.
No,
didn't know we had
stuffed Spurgeon down there.
Stuffed Spurgeon. No, Spurgeon bobblehead.
We got this from Midwestern.
But no, she was here yesterday. She's at the hotel today, and we're headed to the Grand Old Opry tonight.
You were at the Ryman
with
last
the Ryman
night.
Last night.
Yeah.
So I am not a local. So when I come in, I'm the tourist from I'm the person you people hear.
You
in,
have
in
gone
Nashville.
To both of those.
We love
more
people like you.
I know.
I have.
I know. But she was here yesterday. But really, her commitment to say to me, you know, I really sense God calling us to stay here at Warnell for me to be the pastor's wife. I mean, she's you want to talk about a calling to be a revitalizing pastor? How about a calling to be the spouse of a revitalizing pastor?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
They're. So do not try to influence that in them. Don't try to guilt them into it. Certainly don't downsell it and say, look, it's going to be all right. You know, it's not. It's going to be really tough and really hard. And as hard as you think it is, it's going to be harder. And so you've got to make sure that your spouse is fully engaged. And we talk about spousal perseverance through this, not just spousal cooperation.
That's
so for sure.
It's good. When we get to number three, Jonathan, which is?
Stage of life calling.
That's not always the case. I understand that.
Right.
But it can be.
Right.
It may be something that some people say, this is a good point in my life to get involved in revitalization. What do you hear on that, Mark?
I think so. And it was with me. I mean, I was, you know, in the third quarter of my life, so to speak, and headed
to the fifth quarter.
Headed to overtime, headed to sudden death at some point. And so
I like that.
Have you heard?
Wow. I'm going from fourth quarter to sudden death.
And
wow.
And, you know, most of the guys I work with when I was at Warnell, and we had interns, almost all of them, all of those interns are now replanting or something like that. And they were all half my age. So there are young men who are replanting.
Sure.
But the reason I think it was appropriate for me at that stage in my life was I had really learned tactical patience. I had learned some people skills.
Oh, that's good.
I had a sense of perspective.
Wait a minute.
Well, a few. I've forgotten most of them by now.
Oh, that was a softball. I'm sorry, listeners. Go on, Mark.
But I had learned some people skills. I had learned some from my mistakes. And I think having all of that in my bank, so to speak, and knowing how to pull from it and use from it that God has given me all these experiences through all these years really helped me at Warnell. I personally, if I'd have gone to Warnell when I was 28, I would have blown it up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I was 48 and the experience that God gave me. So there is a sense in which sometimes the season of life, God has prepared you for that. But at the same time, I see God calling young men right out of the gate to go to churches filled with elderly people that church is dying in more ways than one. And so I think we see both, but there is a certain stage of life, I think, that can be part of that.
Okay, so I went to, I've referred to, and you've heard me talk about the Isaiah Baptist Church in St. Petersburg, Florida, the only full-time vocational church that would accept me when I graduated from seminary. Went there in 1988, so that would have made me 33?
Yeah.
33 years old. I did not have tactical patience. I had probably some other skills, but I did not have tactical patience. But here's what happened, Mark. The turnaround was successful. A church that was headed toward 100 pretty rapidly became a church over 300 within fewer than 3 years. So the turnaround was successful. The tactical patience was not. I left, and I am certain I left prematurely.
Okay.
Some of it had to do, a lot of it had to do with the financial, but the finances were there. All I had to do was put my ego in my pocket and ask.
Right.
But I wouldn't.
Right.
But there's a case where I think my immaturity hurt the church, and it ended up over the years, not because Rainer's not there, but for different reasons, reversing and now virtually closing.
Good insight.
Yep.
Great word.
All right. Number four, it's a missionary calling, just like any pastor.
Well, it really is. I mean, yeah. You know, you'll have those hours, those days, those periods, those months when you're staying there because of the calling you've got. And
yeah.
It was clear and direct. Not because of the feedback you're getting right now, not because of the results you're feeling at the moment, not because of the pressure and the difficulties and the declining attendance that you have at this moment. I mean, there nearly for nearly every Monday, I think I was, well, 3 Mondays out of 4, I was ready to quit usually and walk away. And you know, the reason I didn't for a number of years was just the call. I remember that distinctive call God placed on me to go to Warnell and my wife as well. And so you really lean into that and you rest on that. And so if you don't have that sense of a missionary calling that God has placed me in this place, not just for this church, although primarily for this church, but also for this neighborhood, for this community. There were times, and maybe on a personal level, I was ready to give up on the church, but I had fallen in love with the neighborhood, and I cared for the neighborhood as well as the church. And I thought both the neighborhood needs the church needs the neighborhood, so to stay there for that reason. And that's a missionary calling in every sense of the word. I'm called to these 45 square blocks right here and 2,000 people. You know, this is my mission field right here. And I think a lot of guys don't really visualize it that way.
That is very, very good.
All right, number five, I mean, it kind of fits in with that. It's a community calling, called to that community.
Boy, how many times have you touched on this? That's rhetorical, but you have touched on your heart. So I just answered my own rhetorical question.
Yeah, I mean, we say that, you know, the success in a revitalization isn't just numerical. In fact, it can't be numerical at first. It must be obedience, a place where the remaining members fall more deeply in love with Jesus and align their hearts to him and submit their lives to his authority and accept his plan for their church, not their plan for their church. That's the first step. And then a pattern of making disciples that make disciples, which results in the community be noticeably better. Because if we're truly disciples of Jesus, we're going to act like Jesus and live like Jesus and have compassion like Jesus and love like Jesus. And if our neighborhood doesn't, if it doesn't become noticeably better because we're acting like Jesus, then we're not really acting like Jesus. And so the neighborhood needs to be better. Even people who never come to your church, their life should some way or another be impacted by the very presence of Christians in that community.
You met any of my sons?
Yes. And, I was with Sam up in Long Island.
Oh, that's right.
We had a great time together.
Oh, and you were also here at Nashville.
And I was here at Nashville.
All three sons were there.
Yeah, I met them all. Yeah.
Okay. Have you seen his slogan for his church?
You know, he shared it up at Long Island.
A neighborhood church for
yep.
the nations.
Yep. Yep.
Isn't that great?
It was great. In fact, I sat in on his presentation in Long Island, and it was awesome. And it was great because he really understands the concept of the neighborhood church, which is what we have really lost in North America.
Absolutely.
We have 40 in our denomination. I know there's a lot of other guys and ladies listening, but we have 40 some thousand churches in our denomination that are under 200 in gathered worship attendance. Those are neighborhood churches. Those are not regional churches. And many of them are trying to function like regional churches, or they're trying to attract the low-hanging, as I say all the time, evangelical fruit, rather than to look at, you know, I tell guys, you got 30 people in your church, right? You got gathered worship of 30, maybe you're bivocational. Do this. How far out do you have to go from your church front door to encounter 300 people, 10 times your gathered worship? You got to go 5 blocks, you got to go 6 blocks, whatever your 10 times.
Probably a couple of blocks.
Yeah, this is just Mark Clifton. I'm not all that bright. But that's what I did at Warnell. And I thought, you know, let's start out. We got 18. How far do I have to go to find 180? Well, I had to go about 2 blocks, 3 mm-hmm. blocks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's my mission field right now. Let's don't try to make the whole city of Kansas City, all right? What about these 5 or 6 blocks, 180 people within that? That's 10 times what we have in gathered worship. And how am I going to be salt and light and love and care for and let these people know we're here for them? Even if it's just simply a matter of going door to door and saying, do you have any way we can pray for you? We pray every Thursday night. Can we just pray for you? We just write some names down. And I mean, things like that. I mean, not really all that unusual.
Did I hear you correctly? You go door to door?
I have. Now, you got to be careful when you go door to door.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't want you coming in, and you don't want to act like you want to come in and that kind of thing.
Okay.
And basically, I won't say, here's what I do when we go door to door. First of all, you have something you can hang on their door, all right? Mm-hmm. So this would be like—
I used to call them door hangers.
Let me write that down. That's a really good idea.
We've actually provided copies
of
those.
Here's what we did. We used Lifeways door hangers and New Testaments and things like that we had. Yeah, you did years ago.
Oh, okay.
And so we started. And so here what you do, we would have a concert that we were going to have in our church, or we would have an event that we were going to have. So it gives you a reason to go to door to door.
Okay.
And you have a door hanger. And so I don't really knock on every door and stand there, but if they're in the yard or if they see you coming.
Got it. That's good.
I engage them. All right. And then you hang the door hanger on there and you invite them to something specific. Or even the door hanger could just say, we're praying for our neighborhood. If you'd like us to pray for you,
here's an email address
and we'll pray for you. That's what I mean. I don't mean necessarily in this day and age.
You are going door to door. You're just not trying to intrude the home.
You're in the neighborhood.
Right? I love that.
All right.
I love that. I got to do something with that, Jonathan.
All right.
Amy, can you make a note for me? I really got to expand upon that. That's good stuff on that door hanging stuff.
All right.
Getting a lot of questions about that. So that's
finally.
Why okay,
it's a personality calling.
Yeah, tell us the personality of a revitalizer or a replanter, Mark.
It's one who doesn't need a lot of affirmation from other people about what he's doing, that he finds his affirmation in the gospel and in what Christ has done for him. It's one who has an ability to work across multi-generational lines and can work with older people and younger people and find great satisfaction in doing all of that. It's one who, as we say all the time, can just look at the long-term picture and not get caught up in the immediacy of results right now, but has a long on-ramp and can look at, hey, I'm going to be here for a long time and have that perspective. So I think all of those things play into it. And a personal calling that says, you know what, my sense of ministry, my sense of worth as a pastor is not caught up in how quick this church grows numerically or how large it becomes numerically, but how obedient I am to seeing these folks come back to loving Jesus more than anything else and seeing this immediate neighborhood impacted for the gospel.
You're touching on this in some ways, but when a potential revitalization pastor or leader asks you or me or Jonathan or Amy do I have to have thick skin to be a revitalization pastor? Your response is?
Yes.
You need armor.
But thick skin, yeah. But thick skin is really the armor of God. I mean, it really is putting on the full armor of God.
So that is a classic Clifton quote.
Okay. It is not just
thick
being...
Thick skin is the full armor of
it
God.
It is not just being calloused and uncaring, all right? But it is putting on the full armor of God. Because if you don't, then Satan will shred you to pieces. I mean, if you just put on your breastplate of righteousness and you're just out there doing your own thing, he'll shred you before breakfast. But if you put on the righteousness of Christ and that's your armor, he cannot harm you.
Well, thank you so much, Joseph, for the question. You generated a lot of conversation with the three of us, and I hope that the responses have been helpful. And though we did not come back and just say yes or no to serving in a revitalization, a unique calling, I think the responses we gave will help frame it a good bit for you and for others. Thank you always, North American Mission Board, for being our wonderful sponsor at Revitalize and Replant.
Thanks again, like you mentioned, to the North American Mission Board, because Revitalize and Replant is sponsored by the North American Mission Board and churchreplanters.com. More than 10% of churches in North America are at risk of closing, and the North American Mission Board is committed to reversing this trend by decreasing the death rate of existing churches while simultaneously increasing the birth rate of new ones. To learn more about what it means to become a replanting pastor or to explore resources for replanting and revitalization in your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.
Well, I hope you've had a happy August. We're headed into September, and we're ready for the fall season to be upon us. That means a lot of things, but for me, it means college football. But it also means that we will continue to serve the local church and this ministry and podcast called Revitalize and Replant. As always, this podcast is based upon the fact that you, the audience, are receiving us, praying for us, and you are really a vital part of all we do. Thank you for helping us grow healthy churches. Together.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer. If you'd like to learn more about re-energizing your church to reach your community, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play or in your favorite podcasting app. For additional resources on church leadership and to join the conversation online, visit tomrainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.